Chapter 20. Chinging in from Mombasa, where Memphis's body had been examined in detail, the neuropractor delivered her verdict to the family members gathered in the household. They could bring him back to life, the figment said. That was always an option, albeit an expensive one. But so much of his brain would need to be rebuilt from scratch that the end result wouldn't be the man they had known. The basic structural organization of his personality had been blasted to shards. There is no gentle way of putting this, but what you would be getting back would be a baby in an old man's body, the figment informed them. Jeffrey, unable to shake the sense that this was all fractionally too rehearsed, a speech that the neuropractor kept up her sleeve to deliver on occasions such as this, while trying to make it sound suitably impromptu and sincere. He wanted to resent her for that, but couldn't. She was just being kind. A confused, frightened baby with just enough recollection to know what it was missing, the specialist went on. Memory, language, all traces of family and friendship, the hard-earned skills and knowledge of a lifetime, and with not enough life ahead of it ever to recover what was lost. We will, of course, abide by your wishes, but I urge you to give deep consideration before taking this course. No discussion was required. For once, the Akinyas were all in agreement. The decision was entirely in their hands, as Memphis had no family but the one that employed him.
We wouldn't want that, Hector said softly, Jeffrey nodding his assent, and knowing as he did so that he was answering for Sunday as well.
I think you're doing the right thing, the specialist said, and I'm so sorry that this has happened.
Jeffrey was still trying to come to terms with what the day had delivered. Everything felt unreal, off kilter. Memphis had been part of his life in a way that Eunice never had. She was a reclusive figure who sometimes beamed herself down from the Winter Palace, but who never walked the household in person. Having her removed from his life was the same as having a part of his own past dismantled, boxed away for posterity. He was sad about it, but it didn't rip him apart. It was different with Memphis. He'd always been there, a living, breathing human presence. The smell of him, the prickly texture of his suit fabric, the squeak of his shoes on waxed flooring as he patrolled the household's corridors at night, more vigilant than any watchdog. Kind when he needed to be, stern when the moment called for it, always willing to forgive, if not necessarily forget. The most decent human being Jeffrey had ever known. He remembered Lucas's words. You imposed on his good nature. The implication wounded, but he had done exactly that. Always had done. Thank you for letting me know, Sunday said, when she chinged back in response to his earlier transmission. Right now, I don't really have a clue what to say. I'm still processing it. I'm so sorry that you had to see him the way he was. But whatever you might think, this wasn't your fault, okay? You asked Memphis to do something for you, but that doesn't mean you have to take responsibility for what happened to him. Memphis was old enough to make his own decisions. If he felt your request endangered him, he'd have told you so. So don't go making this any harder on yourself than it already is. Please, brother. For me...
Sunday collected herself. From the figment, it was hard to tell if she'd been crying or not.
I'm on my way to Pavonis Mons right now. Keep me informed, and I'll be in touch as soon as I'm able.
She touched a finger to her lips.
Love you, brother. Be strong for both of us.
He nodded. He would try, although he did not expect it to be easy. Jeffrey had to get out of the house, so he went for a walk in the gardens, forcing his mind from its ruts as best as he was able. Everywhere he went, though, he found evidence of Memphis's handiwork, choices about the redevelopment of the grounds, the refurbishment of the ornamental fountains, the arabesque detail work in the enclosing wall, the selection of flowers and shrubs in the beds, all these things had ultimately fallen to Memphis. Even when the family had been presented with a series of options, Memphis would already have whittled down a much larger set of possibilities, to the point where any one of the final choices would have been acceptable to him. One of his greatest, subtlest gifts to the Akinyas had been granting them the illusion of free will. Later that afternoon, when Jeffrey had returned indoors, Jumai chinged to say she was on the train from Lagos. Jeffrey was momentarily befuddled until he remembered that he had in fact called and left a message with her shortly after the body was taken away. Everything had been a blur. Jumai had been working, so couldn't take the call there and then. He was still startled that she was on her way. "Get off the train at Kigali," he told her. "I'll meet you there." "All right," she said, doubtfully, as if that wasn't the kind of reception she'd been expecting. "It will be good to see Jumai again," Eunice said, announcing her presence. "You never knew her," Jeffrey snapped. "You never knew anyone at all." It was only later that he realized she'd had the good grace to keep out of his skull while he'd been wandering the grounds. It was a 2-hour flight, and mid-evening by the time he landed in Kigali. Rain was descending, soft and warm, honey-scented, dyed scarlet and cobalt and gold by the station's old-fashioned neon signage. He'd just missed Jumai's arrival. She was sheltering under the concourse's overhanging roof, while taxis and AirPods fussed about and vendors packed up for the night. 2 black bags sagging on the damp concrete either side of her feet like exhausted lap dogs were her only luggage. "You didn't have to do this," Jeffrey said, when they were in the air, wheeling over nighttime Kigali on their way back to the household. "I knew Memphis pretty well," Jumai said, as if he might not remember. They'd both got wet between the station and the AirPod, but were drying off quickly with the cabin heater turned up. "I was part of your life long enough, don't forget." "I'm not likely to." But while he'd remembered to call Jumai, she'd have been hurt if he hadn't. It was only now that he was beginning to remember how closely braided their lives had really been. Weeks, months in Amboseli. Memphis had often come out to the research station while Jumai was fashioning the architecture for the human-elephant neurolink. They'd often ended up eating together late at night, under a single swaying lamp around which mosquitoes orbited like frantic little planets, caught in the death grip of a supermassive star. Long stories, silly laughter, too much wine. Yes, Jumai knew Memphis, had known. He corrected himself. All past tense from now on. He started crying. It was ridiculous. There'd been no particular spur to it, save the helter-skelter progression of his own thoughts, but once he started, he could not stop himself. How foolish he'd been to think he could keep it together, at least until he was out of anyone's sight. "I'm sorry, Jeffrey." Jumai squeezed his hand. "This must be really hard on you. I know how much he meant to you."
"It's hard on Sunday as well," he said, when he was able to speak.
"Is she flying in?"
"Not really an option. Sunday's on Mars, on her way to Pavonis Mons."
They were crossing the southern tip of Lake Victoria. The clouds had parted overhead, the waters as still and clear as if they were cut from black marble.
"What's going on, Jeffrey? Eunice dies, Memphis dies, your sister decides to go to Mars?"
"Something, I don't know what." After a moment, he added, "I might need to go back into space myself. There's a job." He closed his eyes. "It's related, but I can't say much more than that. I might have to break into family property."
"Is that why I'm here? Because I can be useful to you?"
"You know me better than that."
"Perhaps."
She was silent for a few seconds.
"Well, as it happens, I just quit in Lagos. Bad day at the office."
"Really?"
"Yes, really. Nearly got spiked. Figured it was time to bail out before we hit something really nasty. And for what? A dickhead of a boss? Bank accounts from 100 years ago, the tawdry blackmail secrets of the rich and famous. She looked cross-eyed and appalled, as if she'd just picked something repulsive out of her nose. Frankly, if I'm going to die on the job, I'd rather it was for something more interesting than century-old scandal fodder. Geoffrey considered the Winter Palace.
I'm afraid century-old scandal fodder may be the best I can offer instead.
There was silence. The airpod made a tiny course adjustment. Once in a while, another one zipped by in the other direction. But aside from that, they had the night sky all to themselves.
You want to talk about what happened?
Jemai said after a while, in not much more than a whisper.
It's all right with me.
When Geoffrey was not immediately forthcoming, she added,
You said they found him near the elephants, that there'd been an accident?
Something out there got him, but it wasn't elephants.
What then?
I don't know. It's something else. Memphis knew his way around the herd. Elephants didn't do this.
After a while, she said, It must have been quick. That's what the doctor thought. He couldn't have had any warning or he'd have protected himself.
I've never seen anyone do that.
I have,
Geoffrey said, thinking back to the day they had found the death machine and Sunday had nearly died. Once, when I was little. It was during breakfast with Jemai the following morning that the thought struck him, the one that, in retrospect and given his ideas about the cousins, he might reasonably already have entertained. Perhaps, on some unspoken level, he had indeed done that. But he had not come close to voicing it to himself at the level of conscious assessment, and now that he had, now that the thought had pushed itself into his awareness, like a rhino charging into daylight, it was all he could do to sit in stunned wonderment, awed at what his mind had dared to conjure.
What are you thinking?
Eunice asked. I'm thinking it would be a good idea if you fucked off.
Geoffrey?
Jemai asked. He was staring past her through the window, out to the trees beyond the border wall. Eunice was gone.
I'm sorry, he said distractedly. It's just...
It was a bad idea me coming here, wasn't it?
That's not it, he said. But in truth it was disconcerting, having Jemai back at the household but them not sleeping together. Doubly so in that Memphis was not around. Time and time again, his thoughts kept plummeting through the same mental trapdoors. Memphis should hear this. Memphis will know. What will Memphis have to say? And each time he caught himself and swore that it would be the last time. And each time he was mistaken. They'd slept in separate rooms and met in the east wing for breakfast. The household staff vacillated between subdued discretion and the putting on of brave faces, acting as if nothing had happened. This grated on Geoffrey until he realized he was doing exactly the same thing, smiling too emphatically, cracking nervous little half-jokes. They were all simply trying to do what Memphis would have wanted, which was to keep on with business as usual, exactly as if nothing had happened. They were all overdoing it, though.
You don't have to apologize, Jemai said. You're bound to be upset by what's happened. But if this is making you feel awkward, me being here, I can leave at any time.
She dropped her voice to a stage whisper.
It doesn't prevent me working on that, commission.
Honestly, it's not you, Geoffrey assured her. I'm glad to have some company. It's just, there's a lot going on in my head. Like the ghost of his dead grandmother bothering him from beyond the grave. Like the possibility that one or both of his cousins had killed Memphis. There it was, stated as unambiguously as possible. No pussyfooting around that one. The cousins killed Memphis. He'd hoped, upon erecting this suspicion, to be able to knock it down immediately, bulldoze the rubble away, and forget about it. Until that point, he hadn't hated the cousins after all. Or at least if there were degrees of hate, his was on the mildly antipathetic end of the spectrum. Repelled by their manipulative gamesmanship, sickened by their avarice, disgusted by their attachment to family above all else.
but not actually despising them, not actually wishing pain upon them, most of the time. But the idea that they might have killed Memphis or made his death probable, well, when framed so plainly, why exactly not? The cousins bitterly regretted bringing Geoffrey in to help them. That was clear. Since his return from the moon, they'd been well aware that he was keeping information from them and that this deceit extended to Sunday. It was all to do with Eunice, so what better way to limit any further damage than by removing the one man who'd had more access to the old woman than any of them? Killing Memphis blocked Geoffrey's investigations in that particular direction. It also meant that anything damaging that Memphis might have had cause to disclose was now not likely to come to light. And yes, murder. A difficult thing, that, in the surveilled world. Easier to steal the Great Wall of China. The very word had the dark, alchemical glamour of crimes now banished to history, like regicide or blasphemy. But still, murder wasn't impossible, even in 2162, even beyond the de-scrutinized zone, in the loving panoptic gaze of the mechanism. Because the mechanism wasn't infallible, and even this tireless, engineered god couldn't be all places at once. The mandatory enhancements were supposed to weed out the worst criminal tendencies from developing minds before people reached adolescence. But those very tendencies were imprecise, and it was inevitable that someone, now and then, would slip through the mesh. Someone with the mental wiring necessary to premeditate, someone capable of malintent. And if you wanted to commit a crime like that, the Amboseli Basin was far from the worst place you could think of. When had Memphis died? When Geoffrey was away, not keeping his eye on the old man. Where had he died? Out in the sticks where the org was stretched thin, the mechanism ineffectual. Memphis wasn't even wearing his biomedical bracelet, although that could easily have been removed after his death. Who found him? Hector and Lucas, the cousins. Geoffrey closed his eyes, trying to derail his thoughts to get them off this tramline. It didn't work. The cousins killed Memphis. "I'm sorry I dragged you into this," he said. "Dragged me into what? We've barely begun." "Family," he said. "Memphis. Everything. You've given me an out from Lagos, Geoffrey. I'm hardly going to resent you for that. Even if there's an element of self-interest? Like we said, it's business. So long as we're clear about that, all's well." She picked at her food like a bird, rooting through roadside scraps. Geoffrey didn't have much of an appetite either. Even the coffee sat heavily inside him, sloshing around like some toxic byproduct. "Has there been any talk?" she began, then faltered. "Of what?" Jemai set her face in an expression he remembered well, drawing in breath and squaring her jaw. "I'm assuming there are funeral arrangements. I couldn't make it back for your grandmother's scattering, but now that I'm here..." "There's nothing in hand. Memphis never talked to me about what he wanted to happen in the event of his death. And I can't imagine he was any more frank with the rest of the family. Even Sunday wasn't as close to him as I am. Was." He dragged up a smile. "Still adjusting. But I'm glad you mentioned the funeral, because I hadn't given it a moment's thought." "Really?" "I've been so fixated on what happened and what it means. But you're right. There will be a funeral, of course, and I want my sister to be part of it." Jemai looked doubtful. "Even though she's on Mars?" "She'll be back sooner or later. Memphis doesn't have to be cremated and scattered in a hurry, the way my grandmother was. There wasn't time for everyone to get back home then, especially not when some of us were as far out as Titan. It won't be the same with Memphis." Jemai nodded coolly. "And you'll make damn sure of that?" "Yes," Geoffrey said, "because I owe it to my sister, and it's what Memphis would have wanted."
"That's one thing I never understood about your grandmother," Jemai said. "I can understand why no one wanted to move the scattering to suit my needs, but Why did the rest of you have to get here so quickly?
Because that's what Eunice wanted, Jeffrey said. A quick cremation and a quick scattering. She didn't want to wait a year or however long it would take for the whole family to get back to Africa.
She told you that?
No, he answered carefully. But Memphis did. And then he thought about that, and what exactly it meant. After breakfast, Jumai went to swim. Jeffrey returned to his room and sat on the made bed. He slid open the lower drawer of the bedside cabinet and took out the shoe he'd brought with him from the study station. He held it in his hands, chalky ochre dust soiling his fingers. The laces were still tied. The shoe had slipped off the old man's foot without them coming loose. Jeffrey touched the knot, wondering if Memphis had been in the habit of tying his left shoe first or his right. He had a picture in his mind of Memphis resting one foot on the Cessna's undercarriage, doing up his laces, but he couldn't remember which shoe Memphis had started with. Details. Ordinary quotidian details beginning to slip out of focus, and no more than a day had passed. He put the shoe back in the drawer, slid it shut. No idea why he'd been moved to pick it up, as Memphis's chrysalis-bound body was being loaded into the medical transport. Hector and Lucas might even have seen him do it, he wasn't sure. He moved to his desk, settled into the chair, and voked a request to the United Orbital Nations for information relating to the status of asset GGFX13419/785G, aka the Winter Palace. The data was open and public, but even if it hadn't been, the request was coming through Akinya channels. Text floated before him. On 20-262-0714-03-11, UTC. Subject, request for disposal of abandoned asset. Asset code, GGFX13491/785G. Asset type, axially stabilized free-flying habitable structure. Status, disposable authority granted. Disposal mode, discretionary.
What's troubling you? Eunice asked.
He thought about not answering her for a moment, before giving in. They're going to tear down the Winter Palace.
Let them, she said, shrugging with blunt indifference. I don't live there anymore, Jeffrey. Last thing anyone needs is more junk cluttering up the lunar orbit.
It's not junk. It's history, part of us, part of what's made us the way we are. The cousins can't just trash it.
Evidently they can.
She was looking at the text, accessing the same data. Unless someone stops them, Jeffrey said.
You wouldn't be planning anything foolhardy, would you?
I'll get back to you on that one. Jeffrey voked the text away and went outside to find the cousins. He encountered Hector first. He was coming back from the tennis court, sweat-damp towel padded around his neck. A proxy strode alongside him, swinging a racket. Jeffrey blocked the path of the two opponents. Whoever you are, he told the proxy, you can ching right back home.
This is unfortunate, Jeffrey, Hector said,
staring him down.
I'm used to your rudeness. There's absolutely no need to inflict it on my guests.
I was going anyway, the proxy said. Nice game, Hector. Let's do it again sometime.
The proxy became slump-shouldered and loll-headed as soon as the ching was broken, the racket dangling from one limp hand. Hector took the racket, clacking it against his own, then told the proxy to store itself.
There was no need for that, cousin.
You'll get over it. The proxy scooted away, walking like a person in a speeded-up movie. Hector dredged up a pained smile.
And there was me, thinking we were all getting on so well yesterday.
That was then, Jeffrey said.
Anything in particular I can help you with?
You can start by telling me what really happened out there.
Aware, cousin.
Hector unwrapped the towel and began rubbing his hair with it.
Memphis dying. That was so convenient, wasn't it? Solved all your problems in one stroke. No wonder you're in the mood for a game of tennis.
Go back inside. Take a deep breath and start again. We'll both pretend this conversation didn't happen.
I'm not saying you killed him, Jeffrey blurted.
He'd gone too far, he realized immediately, let his temper get the better of him. Off in the distance, Eunice was shaking her head. Hector gave him an appraising nod.
Good. Because if you were...
But it works for you, doesn't it? You can't wait to bury Eunice and everything she did. You just want to get on with running things and not have any nasty surprises jump out at you from the past.
Hector flung his towel onto the path, knowing a household robot would be along to tidy it away.
I think you and I need to have a little chat. You've been acting very strange since you came back from the moon. Stranger, I should say. What were you doing in Tiamat?
Geoffrey stared at him blankly.
Well, you think an aircraft can't be tracked?
Hector pushed.
We knew where you were. Cozying up to the Pans now, are you? Well, they've got money, I'll give you that. Comes at a price, though. I wouldn't trust them any further than I'd trust us, if I wasn't already an Akinya.
Man has his point, Eunice commented. I'll choose my own loyalties, thanks, Geoffrey said.
No one's stopping you,
Hector said.
Big mistake, though, thinking you can make the Pans work for you. What have you got that they want, exactly? Because it isn't money. And if it's charm and diplomacy they're after...
Hector tapped the double rackets against his forehead.
Oh, wait. It's one of two things, isn't it? Elephants or elephant dung?
He lowered the rackets.
You think you're ahead of them, Geoffrey? Able to make them work for you, not the other way around? You're more naive than I thought. And that's saying something.
He paused, his voice turning earnest.
Lucas and I didn't give a fuck about Memphis either way. I'll be honest with you. He was old and past his best. But whatever happened out there, you had better get it into your head that we had nothing to do with it. Whereas you sent an old man to do your dirty work when you had better things to do. It's not me who needs to take a good hard look at his conscience.
I won't let you take down the Winter Palace.
Meaning what?
I don't need to spell it out. Eunice is gone. Memphis is gone. Now the only link to the past is that thing up there. And you can't let it stand.
Lucas was right. He did warn me it was a mistake to ask you to do anything useful. I should have listened.
He pinched sweat from the corner of his eyes.
You enjoy certain benefits, cousin. You think yourself to be above the rest of us, but you're always willing to scuttle back to the household when the need suits you. A room you don't pay for? Free meals and transportation? Dropping the family name when it helps open doors.
Geoffrey glared. I've never done that.
You need a dose of reality, I think. I won't throw you out of the household, not when you have a guest here. But consider all other privileges rescinded. Forthwith, I'll arrange a train ticket for Jemai, an AirPod back to the railway station, but it'll be at my discretion, not yours. You've shamed yourself, Geoffrey. Stop, before you do any more harm.
He moved to punch Hector. It was a stupid, unpremeditated impulse, not something he'd been planning. If he'd thought about it, for more than the instant it took the fury to overcome him, he'd have known how utterly pointless the gesture was going to prove. Hector didn't even flinch, barely raised the rackets in involuntary self-defense. He simply took a step backwards, while the mechanism assessed Geoffrey's intent and intervened to prevent the completion of a violent act. It had been different out at the study station. When Geoffrey had clashed with the cousins there, the org had been thin, the mechanism's omniscience imperfect. Not so here, in the well-ordered environs of the household. A million viewpoints tracked him from instant to instant, an audience of unblinking sensors wired to the tireless peacekeeping web of the surveilled world. In the dirt under his feet, in the granite glint of a wall, in the air itself were more public eyes than he could imagine. His movements being modelled and forward projected, algorithms had triggered escalating in severity. From that nodal point in equatorial East Africa, a seismic ripple had troubled the mechanism. At its epicenter, one calamitous truth. A human being was attempting to perpetrate harm against another. The algorithms debated. Expert systems polled each other. Decision branches cascaded. Prior case histories were sifted for best intervention practice. There was no time to consult human specialists. They'd only be alerted when the mechanism had acted. Jeffrey had barely begun to initiate the punch when something axed his head in two. It was just a headache, but so sudden, so agonizing, that the effect was as instant and debilitating as if he'd been struck by lightning. He froze into paralysis, not even able to scream his pain. Eunice broke up like a jammed signal. Unbalanced by the momentum he'd already put into his swing, Jeffrey toppled past Hector and hit the ground hard, stiff as a statue. The paralysis ebbed. He lay helpless, quivering in the aftershock of the intervention, dust and gravel in his mouth, palms stinging, his trousers wet where he had lost bladder control. The intervention was over as suddenly as it had arrived. The headache was gone, leaving only an endless migraine afterchime.
"That was silly," Hector said, stepping over him, stooping to tap him on the thigh with the rackets. "Very, very silly. Now there'll have to be an inquiry, and you know what that will mean. Psychologists will be involved. Neuropractice. Our name dragged through more dirt. All because you couldn't act like a responsible adult."
Jeffrey pushed himself to his feet. Through the shock of what had happened, the fury remained. Absurd as it was, he still wanted to hit Hector, still wanted to punch that smile away. Eunice hadn't reappeared.
"This isn't over," he said.
Hector averted his gaze from the sorry spectacle before him.
"Go and make yourself presentable.